Okay, here we are. We're back. It's Prog Lang Cast, episode 2. And you're screen sharing. Cool.
Hey.
Episode 2.
This week we're looking at our GHW Goodbye Hello World program. I've written a version in P to compare to the C version that was
I'm not actually seeing your screen. Well, let me just level set set the conversation and just give a reminder where we are from episode one. So on episode one, that's another thing is, our plan, we're right now doing this as a vodcast, a video podcast, but also as a podcast audio only, and already just totally breaking the rules of depending too much on visuals when people are going to be listening. So, I mean, obviously we're going to be talking about code and we're going to be walking through the code, but we need to kind of accommodate the audio only mode and make sure that we talk about things in that way. So I have a couple of errata from last time too. I think I was saying things when I was saying converting, rewatched the video and realized I said converting numbers to strings. I meant to say strings to numbers. And then one time I was saying something about GitHub and it was GitLab or GitLab versus GitHub. So anyway, that's my errata for the week. But to level set us, we are weekly doing this
my
podcast.
Presentation, on the other hand, was perfect last
yeah,
week.
Yeah, no, it was totally, no, you're spot on. You were just right on point. But what are we doing? Well, basically, we got that word just comes up all the time.
Pass that one and like as well.
I'm not a liker. I'm not a like, you know, I meaner. But I've noticed basically and so. Trying to cut out the so-sos.
All right. Well, my monitor just went dark for some reason.
And your face went dark as a result. And I've got reflective glasses on.
I don't know why.
I have my driving contacts on, so I've got to wear these little reading glasses or I can't see the screens.
Why did my screen go dark?
Anyway, while you're figuring out struggling through the screen issues, last week we presented the very first alternative to Hello World that we ostensibly called Goodbye Hello World, but I'm thinking we're probably going to want to rename it anyway. I came up with a list of alternative names that we could talk about later because someone already has the domain name Goodbye Hello World, and I just think it's bad to have projects where someone else claims the domain because they're kind of squatting on your...
Why are we looking for a domain name?
Because it matters. In the internet world, if you're doing something and you don't own the domain, man, trust me, if it ever takes off, and this may never take off, but if it takes off at some point, there's going to be a grappling of somebody owning that name. So better to squat down on a name you know you're going to be able to have.
Not going to lie, I may be pretty surprised.
You never know. You never know what can hit. So I always grab up domain names that I try to, I'm a name junkie anyway. I'm always looking at what's the right name. But for now, it's Goodbye Hello World. And we presented the first variation, which was based on C because it is the Uber language of languages. It seems to be kind of dominant out there and simple and straightforward to understand. And then the plan was last week you chose PHP for this week and you chose for me, you made my choice for me, APL. And before we dive into that, I want to talk about that process. So for the next week, there's two approaches. One, we could pick each other's language again, or we can kind of alternate. So because I thought it could be really frustrating if the other person keeps picking languages you don't like. So I'm thinking we could kind of do like a hopscotch, like a every other one. So since I picked C the first week for myself and you didn't do one, then you picked PHP the second week for yourself and you picked APL for me. Now I'm going to pick one for you for next week. And I'm going to pick one for myself for next week. And then next week, you pick one for yourself and pick one for me. So that way, you're kind of alternating between languages that you would choose and then languages that somebody would throw at you. What do you think of that idea? Or should we just every week be just throwing languages at each other?
I don't have a great deal of preference. I picked APL for you because I know you really have been talking a lot about APL and how much you like it. So I wanted to see what you would do in APL. It wasn't because, I mean, for PHP, I just picked something I didn't like because of the discipline required to do something in things you don't like. Speaking of which, so before we get into that, I wanted to show, we were just talking about a few minutes ago, I added this README file to talk about what we think Goodbye Hello World should try to show.
Yeah.
And we've got a little GIF down here that says how it's going to run. And this is...
Or you say GIF, you don't say GIF? There's entirely internet memes about whether it should be GIF or GIF.
Let's say GIF from now on, okay? It's a GIF. So it's a GIF, it's a GIF.
Okay, so for our audio only people, you have to read out loud what it's doing. Describe what it's doing.
Okay, well, what you can see if you look at it, it's just got a little animated GIF that is showing the output of the program. You put in a command line, specify a value, and it goes through, it types out world hello, and it does a countdown to the number that you put in. So I put in run 5, it comes down world hello, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, goodbye. And then shows a demonstration of putting in something invalid on the command line and how it will take the input from the console. So that's for the people that are listening, although I definitely recommend you watch. So then looking at, but the primarily wanted, what I wanted to talk about in this readme, which for the audio only people, the Goodbye Hello World, traditionally the Hello World program is the first example offered as the introduction to a programming language and does nothing more than output the string Hello World to the output medium, generally the console. While adequate to demonstrate a particular language can actually do something, for anyone other than the novice programmer, a more thorough example is called for. These code examples attempt to demonstrate basic capabilities of the language we will examine by expanding Hello World to include command line parameters, taking input criteria from the command line, prompted input, prompting the user for input criteria, input validation, the examination of input criteria against program limits, conditional branching, altering the execution path based on conditions, and iteration, repeated execution until a condition is met. So those are the 5 additional things into Hello World, and I'm potentially talking about us adding another one. But for now, let's take a look at what I did for PHP. Now, let's go back a little bit and take a look at the C program that we looked at last week.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to compare them actually side by side. Can you pull up one window with the C and the other window with PHP so we can kind of see the differences?
It shouldn't be a problem.
That's one thing I didn't do last week is I didn't actually walk through line by line the code, and I was really like, that might have made sense. I just kind of assumed, oh, this is readable C, and anybody can understand what's going on. But not only that, I mean, the code reflects...
Well, with your code, that's quite an assumption.
Well, and also, you know, any code written is going to be shaped by the person writing it, so... Yeah, I mean, I could walk through the rationale of why I wrote certain lines a certain way, and then you can do the same thing here. So, yeah, let's look at the...
I'm going to go back to me.
Let's look at the C on one side and the your PHP on the other. So, yeah, you need to change directories there. You're in code C on the right. Yeah, code PHP. You're right. The syntaxes are quite similar. Quite similar.
Yeah, they are. I mean, well, it's the C lexer. It's almost exactly the same, in fact. So on the left side, you're seeing the C program.
You've got hold on, just a quick question. I'm looking at this. We're doing a screen share. We're using Discord, and we're using a screen share, and I'm seeing it saying 720p 30 FPS. So it's not it's not very clear here. I think we might have to figure out a better way to do this. Was the image when I did my screen share, was it also as low res or fuzzy? Is there a limit? Just, I don't know how readable this is going to be. Okay. Well, anyway, just plow ahead.
Is it not going to be readable?
I can read it. I've got a Retina display here, but I'm just noticing that thing's coming across at 720. So one of the things I did do on my desktop, at least for videos, since I've started doing videos and I'm a complete neophyte at this, is I've cranked up the fonts on everything. I've cranked up the fonts on my editor and stuff like that, just because, you know, not everybody's going to necessarily be watching this thing at 4K or even HD. So if you can on your side, maybe do a font enlargement. But if you can't for now, let's just plow ahead.
We can't do the high definition video without getting Discord Nitro.
Right. Pay for it. That's the paywall. We hit the paywall. But regardless, even if we were to use the higher resolution, I still think it's good to try to increase font size, which since you're in a browser.
I can do that.
Yeah, do that. Just crank up the font size on each one. Because yeah, there's quite a bit of white space on the right that we don't care about if we crank up the font size. So yeah, there we go. Yeah, it's much nicer.
Is that better?
Yay! Yes. Looks pretty good. Looks pretty readable.
Okay.
All right.
So now, as I was saying, so we see on the left-hand side, we got the C program. On the right-hand side, we have the PHP program. Not much difference other than the C program starts with a main method. You know, and then in the PHP program, it's just a script language, so it starts right from the top. So you can see that the top of the PHP program is very much like the C main method. We have the countdown, we specify our dollar invalid error message. We immediately check to see if there is a command line argument. If there is a command line argument, then we pull it in. Then we're going to do this on the left-hand side on line 11 here. You're seeing that we're going to convert the command line argument using str2l, which is a string to long function in C. And in PHP, being that this is a untyped language, where C is a strongly typed language, it's a pretty much simpler here in that we just simply do this casting to int. And if that fails, the result is going to be zero. Zero is not a valid input for us. So then I say if the countdown is less than or equal to zero, then we say it's an error message. Pretty simple. So PHP does simplify the process, because it's a scripting language and it obfuscates some of this work that's required to be done in C.
Can you give me an example of what you just said?
Well, I just did, for instance, right here. This string to long is an actual function that's going through and it's looking at all the values of argv, trying to convert them to the long value. Well, this is interesting.
Yeah, I don't really see much difference between those two.
I'm wondering, the string to long is taking an input of argv1.
Yeah, the first argument, command line argument. So this this is a really funky function. Str2l is in the C standard library. It's actually in, stdlib.h. That's why there's an include up there. So it takes three arguments. The first argument is the command line argument that we want to convert from a string to a long. But because it can fail, the way this works, rather than throwing some kind of exception or actually even giving you an error code as a return, you give it a pointer, a string pointer, actually an address of a string pointer. So you can see this is really weird. And this just shows you how much in C you've got pointer manipulation going on. So you give it the address of a pointer to a string. What it's going to do is it's going to set the value of that pointer to the first character that fails the conversion. This is how you are told that the conversion was unsuccessful. And the idiomatic way to deal with it is you look at this pointer. You're passing in an out parameter, by the way, which is, you know, very side effectful, right? You're giving it an address of a variable that this function str2l is going to update for you. So you're passing in an out parameter. And what happens is it's going to parse through. And if it runs into any character in the string that it can't convert to a number, it's going to set that character pointer to the position in your string in the first argument. So it's pointing to a position within the pointer of the first argument. If it's successful, it points to the null at the end. And so the way to check is to check if end is pointing to a null, because strings are null terminated in C, then it's been successful. And that's where the if that follows. It basically says if end,
if data at end is not a binary zero.
Yeah, yeah, if it's not a binary zero, it succeeded.
Yeah. Right. That's actually a very reasonable way to approach that call.
Kind of cryptic.
You know, for someone who's like going from these scripted languages, you know, down to C, they're going to struggle with it because those concepts are a little bit foreign. Anybody who's is coming from the C side is going to understand that pretty clearly. Because, like I said before, this is that particular thing is all obfuscated in PHP. on the right hand side on my line seven, all I'm doing is saying, try to cast RB1 to an integer. If it fails, then countdown becomes zero.
So
there's
what
error thrown or anything.
So what happens if it fails on the PHP side? We say dollar countdown equals int argv1. If it can't convert it, what do you get?
Sets countdown to zero.
But what if the number of the string is zero?
Zero is not a valid value on the input. So
I don't bother looking at it. I'm saying it's not a valid value for us because we want a countdown that's greater than zero. But from the point of view of the conversion function, if you were looking to convert the string zero to a number zero, and if it failed, it would also give you a zero. You've got no way to discriminate between failure and a proper conversion. Is that true?
Did I say that I didn't like PHP?
Well, you know what? This issue of a valid conversion and an actual value being returned as an error of conversion doesn't just appear in PHP. This appears in other languages. I think you'll get this probably in some JavaScript libraries too. I'm not a JavaScript expert, so I could be wrong on that. But I've seen this before. I've seen this sort of issue before. And I want to make one other comment too about what you just said about C, how it would be difficult for people going the other direction, like coming from this code on the right, which is PHP going to the C. The C, the str to L, where you know you're giving it this address of a pointer for it to update to point to the string that you passed, and it's depending on it being this null terminating. This is very idiomatic for C because in C, the type of programming you're doing, it's foremost in your mind how memory is formatted. You know, how is a string formatted physically in bytes and in memory? The language just orients itself around that. Right? That's why. In some ways, it's ideally suited for about the lowest level of high-level programming you can do above assembly language because it is in your face at all times. It's not what did you say? Did you say obfuscated? Yeah, it's not abstracted. It's not concealed from you. There's no attempt to conceal from you the physical memory layout of anything in C because the assumption is you actually want that. You're programming in C so that you can know and manipulate and control things that are happening on a byte-by-byte representation level. And so all of its APIs are kind of oriented around that sort of thinking. That's just a comment I wanted to make on that.
Well, I would go further and say the biggest struggle that I had, that I think anybody coming in to see, because my transition was to go from basic to assembly language to C. And when I got there, the biggest thing I had trouble getting my head around was the need for the binary zero at the end of strings.
Oh, really?
Especially coming from a basic environment where string is a data type managed internally. Pascal as well. I mean, it's a data type, whereas Pascal, at least the original Pascal, the first byte, the byte zero of a string was actually the length
of the string. Yeah, that's right.
So you couldn't have a string longer than 255 characters in the old Pascal.
Yeah.
And that's how that was all managed. So it was abstracted out. It was obfuscated from you how that was handled. So when I moved over to C, the thing I had the most trouble with was the need for the binary zero. I got a string of 10 characters. Why do I have to say it's 11 characters long? And why is string position 10, therefore, the last position in the string? It's actually not position 10, it's position 11. And why do I need that extra character? And I remember when I finally figured out that every string method, every string function in C, strings are not a type in C. That was the thing.
Right.
Strings are character arrays.
Yeah.
There's no such type. And that was the way that C determined what the end of the string was, is when it hit the binary zero. And it was all a matter of implementation. Every C function out there simply said, oh, okay, if you're pointing at this and saying this is a string, I'm going to look till I find the binary zero, which meant you could pass it any value at all. You could pass it a null, you could pass it an integer, and then it would do whatever it's going to do. You do a string copy, you pass in an integer. Well, the compiler didn't give a damn. It didn't let you do it, and it's going to make your program go haywire. But that was the thing that was hardest for me to get my head around, was the need for that binary zero. And once I did, I remember sitting at my desk looking at that and going, oh, shit, that's how that works. And then, of course, it all fell into place and I didn't understand why I never got it before. And I still to this day don't understand that. But getting back to this question, yes, that's all abstracted and obfuscated in languages like PHP. So In one regard, we could say doing something like our goodbye hello world is easier to do in PHP. Yes and no. At least in my personal opinion.
It actually doesn't look easier. I'm looking at the code. It's like there's just as much code. So it's not really it's not really that higher level. I would say what you were saying about obfuscating, in the example you have where you actually do the conversion, where you do countdown equals int in parentheses prefix to argv, it's dynamically typed, but it is strongly typed. It's not weakly typed. I'm sorry, it's not statically typed, but it is strongly typed, right? It is going to give us, you are having to specify a type here, even dynamically. In other words, if it was weakly typed, like JavaScript, it would just automatically do implicit conversions, right? When you, like, say, for example, if you add two numbers that are wrapped in quotes in JavaScript, it's going to treat them like, it's going to obey, oh, I'm going to try to convert them to numbers. It's weakly typed. It's not going to enforce any typing. The fact that you had to specify int here is telling me that, yes, this is dynamically typed. In other words, this is happening at runtime versus compile time, but it is requiring you to identify the type you expect it to be converted to. So that is a form of strong typing. It's just not statically typed.
That might be debatable. I mean, in this particular case, because that is a runtime conversion, and all it's saying, because we have an untyped language, any variable can be anything. You simply assign it. And in fact, there's a lot of little functions in PHP to help you determine that. Like, one of the things I find frustrating is the function is int, which also has is integer, which is essentially the same. It's an alias for is int. And they don't actually tell you whether or not the string that you're passing in will convert to an integer. It tells you whether or not the variable that you're asking it to check is an integer, which can be really confusing. Another one of the things about PHP I'm not crazy about. But in this particular case, this is doing exactly the same thing that your C is doing. It's taking that string value and attempting to convert it to an integer value. In this case, yours is doing long, and it's attempting to convert it to an integer value. But if it fails, instead of throwing an error or setting a pointer to the first location that failed, it'll simply set the output to zero.
Let me ask you a question. Does it need to be converted? Can you just keep countdown as a string and still use it arithmetically down below where you actually do the for loop? Can you actually say I equals countdown and you didn't bother to convert it to an integer? Would it do it for you?
That's a good question. That might be worth evaluating. I didn't think to evaluate that condition.
So you're just trying to kind of match the logic of the C code on the left.
Well, I guess you could say I was, because there, you know, it's all the C lexers. So I thought, okay, well, I'll just try to go line for line and see what it takes to convert that while simplifying it where possible. I didn't try to address, be honest, it didn't occur to me to try to address that question that you're talking about.
Yeah, because in C you have to, right? You can't say for I equals 1, 2, and then the type on the right can be a string. Right? Like, by fact, if you passed a string pointer, it would just treat it as an integer of the pointer value, and that would be the end point of your iteration. And C would probably not do anything about it. It'd be like, okay, you're giving me this pointer to a string, which you're using it in an expression that expects a number. And pointers are convertible to integers, and I'm just going to treat it as an integer and go ahead and iterate all the way to whatever that pointer value is. So if you don't convert it, if you don't actually do a string data conversion to a number, it could cause a whole host of problems over here. You might get a warning error on it, possibly, depending on warning enforcements and stuff. I haven't actually done pure C programming from scratch for anything significant in a while, so I'm not sure about that, but
the same way for me.
Yeah.
Going back to PHP, it's been a little while. Like I said, it's not a language I'm crazy about, so I avoid it unless I have to work in it. But it's like any other language, you know, once you roll back into it again and spend a few days working on it, then it all starts to come back. And you know, plus we've got our great library of stuff out in the internet. You can just ask questions. How do you do this in C? How do you do this in PHP? I'm curious about how well that works in APL, but let's move on and talk about the next part of this.
Okay.
Where now we've taken the input, and again, you're right. I did try to stay more or less with the structure that you outlined in C. And I think that's actually a good idea to stay with. I mean, if I, one of the things that I might have said in the beginning of this for Goodbye Hello World is, in addition to saying, okay, these are the different things we want to demonstrate, I would say, okay, let's try to pseudocode it. Let's try to just write up in English what we want this thing to do. And we'll try to code these individual things in other languages. But a very valid argument for that will be, well, you're going to run into circumstances where that doesn't lend itself to the language at all. And the language may want to do it completely differently. But it's just a thought. Well, in this particular case,
Yeah, the one thing I see just from looking at the code side by side that it demonstrates is that other than syntax difference, other than one being statically compiled language, the other being a dynamically interpreted language, structurally, semantically, they're both imperative procedural languages. At least this code is written in an imperative procedural form. And so logically, it's, I would say they're more similar than they are different from that standpoint.
Very much so. In fact, I would point out the primary differences then you see that you see other than the one that we just looked at, which is about converting one type to another. PHP being a non-statically typed language is much more fluid in that regard. The only other thing that I would point out is string interpolation. And that's something you can't do in C. C handles that quite nicely with your printf and your
sprintf. Yeah, sprintf is like the standard way to go for that.
Sure, but whereas in scripted languages like PHP, like even JavaScript now, and Perl, for instance, is another one. And of course, in the Linux environment, just in the shell, string interpolation is.
Oh my God! I so hate doing parameter substitution and stringification stuff in shell, man. That syntax is, in my opinion, one of the most painful. I'm never able to remember it. I always have to diligently look through the code look through the documentation and stuff like that. And I've written a lot of shell scripts. Basically, I go back to old shell scripts and I see how I did it one way and just try to hack it apart, mm-hmm. just cut and paste borrow and steal. But
yeah. All great software engineers, steal rather than write. So that's a perfectly normal for anybody who's watching. Always steal somebody else's good code rather than write your own. Don't get emotional about code, and don't give a damn where it comes from. If it's clean, if it's well written, and it works the way you want it to, then use it. I don't think they're going to mind. Okay, so in looking at this different one here, so again, like you say, this while loop very much the same. You're printing the countdown. I'm using the echo command. Then you have to specify an input variable where I don't have to do that. I can just create an input variable dynamically by assigning it. Other than that, it's very much the same call.
You didn't have to add the flushes.
You have to get the input.
I noticed. You didn't have to add the flushes. So the standard IO stuff in terms of, making sure something goes out without a new line, you could see there's a few flushes in there and stuff like that. You didn't need to do that on the right side.
Depends on how your buffering is set in both C and PHP. You can control that.
Yeah, there is a way to override it in C, but I didn't want to do that globally. I thought it made more sense within the code for it to specifically do what it needs to do.
Plus, I don't think it's really important to the discussion. We're really just trying to show GHW as a more reasonable introduction to a language and what it's capable of. So looking at this countdown, again, it's all very much the same. It goes through the rtrim, the fgits, which I do an rtrim on, then I do the conversion, same as in the previous, and then check to see if it's less than or equal to zero. Simple, nothing to it.
I do notice that you have a sleep function, and that's standard. So that was one of the rubs we had on C over there, was that this sleep function was kind of weird. It's called nanosleep. It's in the time header, and it only shows up if you use the right command line parameters to the compiler, being GCC or Clang. Otherwise, that doesn't show up. So there's, on the C side, they're still struggling with the idea of trying to standardize concurrency for sure. And just in this case, a simple sleep primitive. But it looks like in PHP, it's just built in right there.
Well, this is also in the non-thread safe PHP build, which is really the only one you want to use because it's really not, PHP was never written to be multi-threaded. I mean, it was written as one of the early server-side languages for the World Wide Web. So there was never any issue about threading. The only time that the threading version of it comes in is when you actually want to use it in a web server. Then they want to use the threading version, whereas C has always been a threadable language.
Well, it doesn't have an opinion on threads. That's why it totally depends on the platform environment that it's sitting on top of. It's assuming that that's a system service problem that it doesn't have to deal with. And it's one of the reasons why they struggled even from C11 through C17 to try to standardize it, because everybody's so used to, well, on Linux, I use pthreads, on Windows, I use, you know, the Windows header and grab its threading stuff, and in other environments, BSDs or whatever, I'm going to use whatever's native there. That most of the time in C, at least original C, the language provides next to nothing, right? You're talking to an operating system. You're talking to whatever platform you're sitting onto directly. And the assumption on the scripting languages is it should be more portable.
Which brings up another question. And I'll get back to it. I just wanted to kind of quickly go down to the bottom here and show this is, again, we're virtually talking about the same thing. We have our loop that counts, that does the countdown.
Yeah.
It's doing the output for each one of them on both sides, and it does the sleep. You're using the nano sleep. I'm using the integrated sleep function, and then it just says goodbye. So again, other than taking out these things that are abstracted, like for instance, the echo here, that's using string interpolation, where you're having to use
printf.
The printf.
Yeah.
Okay, it's so much easier equivalent to use string interpolation, which is not available to you.
When you say interpolation, you're saying that you can embed the names of the variables, or in some cases, full language expressions directly into the string. Whereas in sprintf, you have to use these codifications, this %d, and then the arguments are passed after the string. So most modern languages like Kotlin, Rust has this, Swift has this, where you're able to usually using, actually, I think it's a dollar sign in a lot of cases. I think in Kotlin it's a dollar sign too, where you can just say dollar sign, then you embed any language expression within that, and it will essentially execute within. So
they've even added the same thing to C#.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's too awesome a feature. String interpolation is a wonderful thing that you could do. My first experience with it was in Perl.
And one of the reasons why it just comes up in almost everything we do, and so it makes sense to include that sort of thing within our goodbye hello world, because you're going to be running across it.
So that's fundamentally the comparison between these two, that like they're very much the same. You're offered very much the same kind of stuff. It's using the C lecture. But the primary difference is on the left, C is a compiled language. You compile the program and then run it. And
statically then typed, compiled language. Right side, we've got dynamically typed, interpreted language. But syntactically, they're very similar. The code looks very much the same. It's a little simpler on the right side, I'd say. It's a little less rigmarole you have to go through. Like if you look at the if statement on the left with the F get S and the scan and all of that, it gets a little awkward. It's a little intricate understanding how that stuff works. It's simpler on the right for sure. Although it's the same name function, F get S. Wow. Mm-hmm. So there's a heritage of C, definitely heavily influenced from C.
Well, what's funny about that is that another way of reading the console is a function called readline.
Right.
It's specifically designed for reading the console, which I find interesting because fgets is embedded in the language, just like it is in C. And there's really no reason to do anything else, at least not to my mind, but apparently readline offers some more capability. I didn't use readline because it wasn't available. I might have, in fact, I started, but then it didn't have it. I had to install another package to make it available.
So it's not part of the standard library, or the standard library isn't normally available?
I can't answer that question. I didn't research it terribly. I can tell you when I tried to run it, it said readline is not included, which meant on the Windows side, which is where I was initially running this, it's going to be in some DLL somewhere. I mean, it may run with readline on WSL, which is where this, you know, it works in both Windows and WSL. So,
Okay. But that's where we're definitely sticking strictly to using only things within the language built in or standard library, and avoiding any time there's a package dependency. And even if there is a package dependency needed for a language for a particular feature that we're including in our spec, I would suggest that we just leave it as a gap. I would suggest that we basically say, look, this language in its default state, its built-ins and its standard library is incapable of certain things. In other words, it has to reach out to a third-party library or the platform. Like I showed with C, if we actually have to do threading with C, we can't rely on the threads.h library. It's an optional standard. And so that's a gap on the C side. Whereas when we do a language like Go or Kotlin or Erlang, concurrency is intimately built into the language. So
yes, but C was implemented before there was concurrency. You know, originally there really wasn't any.
Well, it was small. I'm not actually trying to critique the language. I'm just saying that going forward, when we find a gap, I would suggest we leave the gaps in place. I mean, we demonstrate that a full set of these features can't be done by this particular language, and that just becomes a gap on that language.
Right.
Okay. Any other thoughts on this PHP?
Yeah, let's move on to one other thing I wanted to show.
Okay.
Which is this other one. I wrote this one because I wondered if...
It's a lot shorter. A lot less code.
It's a little bit shorter. The reason is because the validation of the input that we saw before... Well, yeah. You can see it on the left side here. We're doing the validation here. And we're doing it here.
Actually.
Okay. Those are two different validations of the same thing. Yes. And the code over here, it was exactly the same code to do the validation in PHP.
Yep.
So I wrote this function to do that same validation on an input. And it's a pure function. You pass in the input value. It tries to convert it to a number. It makes sure that it's greater than zero. If it's not, it gives you the invalid countdown and then returns -1. And so it's used here in your check of argc, and it's used here in your while loop of taking input from the customer. Otherwise, the hello world is the same. And so I looked at this and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to write this as a second one and then ask the question, do we potentially want to update our standards for GHW to add code reuse as a code example in the GHW design to say, in addition to all these other things, and here's how it handles code reuse?
I would say we don't need to call it out as a specific feature in the spec, because the spec is from the point of view of using the app. Like it prompts this, it does this validation and does that. I would say it's up to the programmer writing the example. So I think it's a good idea that it's done here. And I think you can show variations on how to do this, but I wouldn't add it as an actual requirement. What I'm thinking is we add functional requirements or... God, that's the wrong word. Every requirement's a functional requirement. That we add usability requirements that drive or that will drive us to have to do certain things like iterating and validating and string conversion. Because, for example, you can see on the left side, on the C side, the validation of the countdown is not commonalized because completely different implementation is used in both cases. In the case of the command line argument, it takes an existing string and uses str to l. When it goes out and asks the user for it, it uses scanf doing its conversion. Two different ways to do it in C. And this is showing, oh, here's two different approaches. One is when you have the string, and the other one was you're inputting the string.
That's true, but it didn't have to be.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. So it was like the programmer's discretion to decide how to do that. So I would say, since you were writing the PHP version, it's up to you which one you want to include. If you want to include one that commonalizes it, but it provides the spec, then that's great. In fact, I think the more recommended approach is do what is considered the idiomatic way in that language, right? What's idiomatic for that language? What is considered, and again, this is a subject, this is judgment, but since you're the PHP programmer, if you were a PHP programmer, what would be the most idiomatic way to do it? And if that is the way, then that's a good way to do it.
Okay, well, first of all, in my experience with looking at other people's PHP code and other code in other scripting languages, I would say it would be idiomatic to key block everywhere.
To do what?
Because that is an absolute favorite of programmers out there.
Well, but let's not get too mean here.
I just think it was, here's the other argument I would make is I would actually say to you, well, C is, idiomatically a more functionally based language that inherently promotes code reuse in the use of functions. And so that's really what I'm talking about. I think the argument that I would make, because I would be very interested if I want to look at a small program that tells me what the basic functions of this what the language offers and how I might do something, I can say code reuse is something I would definitely be looking for. I'd want to say, okay, how can I write one piece of code that I can use in multiple places? And having a small example of that, I think would be a good requirement for it. But that's just my take on it.
Sure. I mean, I'm not that strident about it. Like I said, the reason on the left I did not commonalize it is so that I could show two different ways within standard C that numbers could be converted, because there are two different ways. And so Depending on the context and maybe to some degree preference, one way or the other, and it shows both. Whereas in your case, you're basically saying, well, there's one way to convert it, so why repeat the code when it can be easily, especially in things like
there's multiple ways. Well, okay, I see your point. You wanted to show two different ways to convert the input.
Well, not only that, I was looking at idiomatic patterns in C. So, for example, fgets isn't the only way to take input from the console, right? There are multiple ways to do it. So I did my own research and said, what is the general consensus on the better way to do it? And if you go to Stack Overflow and you have arguments about how to do input, people will say, well, this has that downside and that has that downside. And so I made a judgment call. I said, well, this seems to be, for this particular, in this context, just taking this input from the command line and converting it, this would be a very idiomatic way to do it. Certainly not the only way. Might not even be the way that I would do it if I was, doing a heavy duty application work in C, but it felt right for this use case in that case. And then stir to L for the parsing the command line arguments rather than, for example, I could have used scanf, but it would have been, it would have been awkward. Yeah, I could have used it, but it would have,
well, you
felt
would have
more
used
awkward.
The same thing. You would have used scanf against the argv1.
Right. Exactly.
The same thing.
One thing I do need to ding you on, and that is get countdown is not a pure function from the functional standpoint because of the echo, right?
Okay, good point.
If you wanted to make it pure, you would have to return the error as a string produced by the function. You could not do anything in the environment to make for it to be pure. But otherwise, you're right, it would be pure. Actually, yes, because input is the input parameter.
Countdown. I didn't realize that that was a requirement of a pure function. Pure in the sense that it's agnostic as to its executing environment. Is that what you mean?
So a pure function, what I call in functional programming, a function. I've decided to become very extreme. And what people call pure functions, I call functions. And what's not a pure function, I call a procedure. And in fact, if you go back to the old Pascal days, you'll remember that Pascal does make the distinction between a procedure and a function. In their case, they're not so much focusing on purity, but a procedure does not return an argument, and a function does return an argument, ostensibly because...
Right, like the old subroutine in the function.
Yeah, exactly, but in Pascal, they actually use that terminology. Like it's actually procedure, there's no return, because the expectation is a procedure is a sequence of actions, in other words, side-effectful. And a function is a computation or a calculation, meaning I give you some information, you do some kind of transformation or computation, and you give me a result. In the functional programming world, because later on after Pascal, and here's what's funny, in the Lisp world, particularly in Scheme, they don't use the term function at all. They call them procedures. They call everything procedures. Even functions are called procedures because They don't enforce purity. So anytime you write any kind of procedure slash function, you have the ability to mutate things in the environment. You have the ability to do side effectful things. So it's funny how in that part of the world, if you're in the Lisp part of the world, you'll see the word procedure used. If you're in the Pascal world, you see the distinction between procedure and function. But if you're in the world of Java, JavaScript, Kotlin, Swift, even Rust, they will all use the prefixes fun or funk or fn. Like in Rust, it's, you know, for some reason they can't all agree on the same abbreviation, right? So in Rust, it's fn. In Swift, it's funk. Kotlin, it's fun. What is it in Java? Is it fun, function, void? Maybe it doesn't even have a keyword. But the point is that the word function has now become so watered down that it means subroutine, like you're saying, a named subroutine that you can call that may just do a calculation and nothing else, or it may do something, it may have side effects. And so the definition of a pure function is a function. The easiest way to think about it is if you can replace a call to a function with a table lookup, it's a pure function. That's called referential transparency. A pure function only depends on the input that you pass it, has no ability to depend on anything outside the function, has no ability to change anything outside the function. So it can't do any I/O, it can't change the environment in any way, can't depend on an environment in any way. And it produces a result that's a value as a result of the values you pass in. And because it's pure, the same arguments passed to the same function ever are always going to be the same. So it doesn't matter what the name of the function is or the purpose, but if you pass a set of arguments and you always get that same result, it's guaranteed to produce a certain result. That's a pure function. And in the mathematical world, it's just called a function. And it's referentially transparent, meaning you could totally optimize your program by replacing function calls with table lookups. And actually, in old physics and mathematical manuals, they actually do this. This is where the referential transparency comes up with. For example, let's say you want to know the cosine of an angle, right? If you look at the cosine of an angle, you pass it a value. Let's say the angle is 60 degrees. You're going to get an answer. And every time you pass it 60 degrees, you're always going to get the same answer. Well, you can actually get dictionaries in physics and mathematics, so you don't need a calculator, that have tables that literally have the tables in them. It says, it gives you the answer. It's like, if it's 60 degrees, it's this. If it's 30 degrees, it's that. It's like up to 4 digits of precision. And so you can think of pure functions in your program as if something you could replace with a table that would say, given these arguments, the result is always going to be these results. Does that make sense?
Sure. I'm not going to lie. You lost me about 3 minutes ago.
So anyway, in functional programming, our goal is to have as much of our code in the form of pure functions that don't depend on the environment and don't change the environment and will always consistently return the same results. And the benefit of that is it's so much easier to reason about your code when the chunks of the code you're looking at are entirely predictable. When you have procedures, subroutines, or functions that either depend on something in its global environment or change something in its global environment, you can never predict what its behavior is without knowing what its global environment, the current state of its global environment. So it's not as easy to reason about. And as a result, it's much more fragile and prone to errors and that sort of thing. So the central philosophy of functional programming is to do as much as pure and pure functions as possible.
You know what I think we might want to do is might schedule the idea of having a discussion about programming another vodcast.
Sure.
Because obviously there's a lot to say about it. In other words, not just discussing it, but also maybe what we want to do. Goodbye Hello World has a specific design to show very rudimentary capabilities of any given language, something that'll just give you something a little bit more informative than the standard Hello World. We might want to engage in something later on that compares the functional writing some things in different languages that are designed to be purely functional, how you can do that. I think that might be worthwhile as another discussion podcast at some point. I personally would like to see that. It's kind of the same reason that Clint Eastwood makes movies, because he wants to see them.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, which is my plan to give you for next week a language. You ready for it? You want to hear this one?
No. Joe, hold on. Hold that thought for a minute, because I did want to get back to my original point,
all right,
which was the issue of code reuse. That was the argument that I was making when I wrote the second one, was to say, is code reuse, my argument for it would be to say, I would not mind seeing, if we include something Goodbye Hello World, that it does allow code reuse, and how it does that. Does it do it with a function? Does it do it with a go sub? Does it do it with a procedure? Is it, you know, how do you do code reuse in the language in a very basic way, without getting into the, you know, the internals, how many different ways, how many parameters you can pass, how much you can return, you know, just getting into showing this is how it does code reuse. And that was my argument, was I think it would be a viable point to add to Goodbye Hello World.
Well, go ahead and add it. Go ahead and add it. I would say go ahead and add it.
You think that's a good idea?
Yeah, sure.
All right, then I'll add that as a point. We'll try to include that going forward in the other languages we're going to work with. So what language do you want me to do it in next?
So there's that. So I was going to make it both easy for you and challenging. So I want to see the expression on your face. So easy for you is going to be, since you were struggling in particular, now that you have Windows Subsystem for Linux 2 set up, and I know that's a painful process. It was funny. I looked through my diary and I saw how many steps I had to go through and how many scripts I wrote to help set that thing up. They do not make it easy for you to do a Linux subsystem on Windows. But now you're set up, so actually doing anything in a POSIX environment on Windows will be easy for you. But I was thinking before you got through that process how to make it somewhat easier, and that is do something in the .NET stack, because that you can do straight from native. You can do it from a PowerShell. You can do it from a command.exe shell. But for fun, F#. That's a new language for you. You're a C# guy.
So you want me to do this in a Windows-based environment. We're not talking about doing it from WSL?
In the case of F#, I think it makes sense for you to go straight up .NET-wise, because that's it.
Well, I'm not sure. That's where it lives. I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure that I can't do it in .NET. I can try it with Mono. But, you know, of course, they're with .NET Core, they're trying to move, you know, they're moving into the Linux environment.
Well, it also they also have .NET on Mac. They also have it. They have it in Linux and they have it on Mac. And in fact, I was looking at F# as a possible scripting language because it did have those environments. But I've kind of pushed that out. I will say the only requirement that I would like to impose on you, I can't tell you to do anything, but I'm going to suggest F#. It's going to be, you're strong in .NET, so it's a familiar platform to work in. If you want to take it to the next level and try to, you know, make it run under POSIX, you know, who knows how that's going to work out. But the challenge that's more important, I think, is that you need to do it in an idiomatic F# style, meaning functional, because F# is a functional language. And the thing about F# is it will allow you to interface C# libraries, and it will allow you to actually interface classes. I think you can actually even define classes and stuff, but that's not considered idiomatic F#. Idiomatic F# is considered.
Don't tell me anything else. Don't tell me anything else.
So what I'm saying is do it in F# and do it in as functional way as you think you can, you'd like to do it in, and we'll see how that turns out.
All right.
And this will be a good thing.
I'm getting that going. And you're gonna continue to work on the APL version?
Well, I didn't finish. I'm gonna finish, but I need a new language. So what did we decide? Actually, let's stop the screen share so we can see our two heads there. So we can cancel that out. There should be a way to do both. There we go. Actually, you don't have to stop the screen share. We just do this. What did we decide? Are we going to throw a new language?
You said you were going to pick one for me and for you this week.
Okay. So then next week you pick for yourself and pick for me.
Okay.
So Yeah, I'm still struggling with the APL. Did we want to go through that, or we've already burned through our hour? Maybe we should.
No, we would burn through that. We'll hold that off for next time.
Yeah, I haven't even finished it, but I tell you what I'm going to do for next week. I'm going to add another language, and I was really going to go for it by jumping paradigm, almost jumping styles of languages. But since I'm still struggling with getting the APL one done, I'll go ahead and pick a second array language. So two array languages. So it's the same paradigms, the same approach, but different languages. I'm using GNU APL for APL. The next most popular array language is going to be J. So I'm going to do J, which is actually APL 2. So the creator of APL, Ken Iverson, after he did APL and did all his great work with APL, he went on to make his kind of second generation, although there is an APL2 that IBM created. He went on to do his second great work, which was the language J. And one of the interesting differences is APL requires a unique character set for its symbols, right? And that's why people tend to call it hieroglyphics. You need a special keyboard, you need special keys. In J, he still went with the idea of symbols, but he decided to restrict it to the ASCII character set. So a lot of the operators, rather than being single letters, end up being what they call digraphs, two letters. So like a slash and a dot means something, a slash and a colon means something else.
I get it.
But it is the next generation of the language.
I'd be interested to see the comparison. You know, I mean, yeah. It would be very interesting to see a literal comparison line by line.
You know, yeah, exactly. So I think next week we'll... Yeah, I'll be able to present APL and J, and we'll compare it to the C version and see how the two are probably going to be closer to each other. The J and the APL are going to look very similar. It's going to look very different from the C version.
Are we considering doing an assembler version?
Why not?
Or do we want to? I mean, I don't know if there's really any reason for doing that.
Oh no, assembly's a language. I mean, for sure.
Yes.
I would say in particular one of the. It's
going to be tough to keep it to one page, but yeah.
I would say the most important assembly language to do it in would be WebAssembly, because that is the new universal assembler coming up.
I'd love to tackle that one. But yeah. We don't have to do that for now. I'll do F-sharp.
You're going to do F-sharp. So yeah, I think you'll have fun with that. And I love those Scott Woloshin videos. I think he's the best resource for understanding the language and the idioms of it and how to do it. And he's very entertaining to watch. So we have lots of that in our server thing already there. So F sharp for you, continue APL, and I'm going to add J to the list because I got sloppy and fell behind, and see how this looks in array language.
Don't feel bad. I was so busy this past week, I could barely get anything done. That's why I've been frantically doing it since Friday.
Yeah.
And PHP is pretty easy. F sharp's going to be a little bit more complicated.
That'll be fun.
I look forward to doing that next week.
I think you'll have fun. I think you'll like it. You might like it.
All right.
We'll see.
We'll give it a try.
Okay, I think that's it for us for this week. We're under an hour here on our recording. If anyone's out there and entertained, we're glad for it. I'm glad for it.
And we'll see you again next week.
Yeah, till we see you again. I wish you the best of luck.